Track 13, Unit 11, Listening, Part 1. Multiple choice. Extract 1. You hear a woman talking about her childhood in the countryside.
When I was about 10, we uprooted to a quaint village in the English countryside. The kind that you see on TV and muse about how wonderful it must be to escape from the hustle and bustle of the city. I'm not sure my parents were driven by the idea of idyllic surroundings for children to grow up, but that's how they sold it to us at the time. Looking back, it seems to have been rather more prosaic. The house they bought was certainly generous in terms of square metres and right up there in terms of glamour when compared with what they could have afforded in a city. It wasn't exactly off the beaten track, but the lack of kids of my own age, coupled with the appalling public transport network and winding roads that were too dangerous to ride a bike on, meant I spent much of my youth feeling trapped and alone. The picturesque views, so enchanting initially, felt bleak and oppressive. When I hit 18 and had the opportunity to up sticks to head to uni, I didn't hesitate to choose a buzzing urban centre with a thriving student social life and buses and trams galore. I've never looked back since.
Extract 2. You will hear two friends discussing some old buildings.
Why don't they demolish those derelict factories? What an eyesore.
Seriously? They're part of the city's heritage. This whole district used to be the throbbing heart of the city, with tens of thousands of workers churning out vast quantities of high-quality manufactured goods.
That's as may be, but we can't live in the past. The present needs of the city surely trump nostalgia about dilapidated factories. Today's inhabitants need affordable housing, office spaces, somewhere to relax and socialize.
Just because they're in dire need of sprucing up, it doesn't mean we have to rip up the old to replace it with the new. There's massive untapped demand for warehouse conversions, both for residential and commercial purposes. People will fork out a fortune to live and work in a place with a sense of history.
Actually, you're talking about a modest but vocal niche. Converting all factories is a logistical nightmare. What with all the toxic chemicals, unstable structures, poor infrastructure, and so on, it's far better value for money to start from scratch. And with most locals on a tight budget, that's all that matters.
Extract 3. You will hear part of a lecture about the psychology of cities.
You can all probably think of different cities that are known for their traditional mindset, their innovativeness, their rebelliousness. But what does it mean to talk about the personalities of cities? It certainly sounds like pseudoscience, doesn't it? In fact, there's a simple mechanism to explain it. Once a city gains a reputation for a particular trait, perhaps as a result of a few well-known residents or an influential institution such as a university or theatre, then as the years pass, newcomers with similar characteristics are attracted, perhaps subconsciously, while those who don't identify with them are put off, accentuating the city's personality in the process. A recent study set out to demonstrate whether living in a city whose personality matches your own can improve your self-esteem. And indeed, the researchers identified such a relationship, although it was dwarfed by the far more powerful connection between certain personality traits, such as extroversion and self-esteem, which has long been proven to exist. The researchers noted the need for caution as to the direction of causation, however. It may be simply that people with greater self-esteem tend to have the self-confidence to take control over their residency.